This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham filling in, 713-572-4610. Robert Harris producing today's show. So we've talked a lot this offseason. There's been plenty of offseason storylines for the Houston Texans, but the season, it's right around the corner. A lot of things to be excited for. 17 games. I started to see some fantasy football rankings, who to draft where, who to draft, you know, when to draft them, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that kind of fascinates me is how outsiders are viewing this Houston Texans team. Because I look at it, I look at a roster that's not very good. There's questions at quarterback. Do you play Tyrod Taylor? Do you go with the rookie right out of the gate? How much of him do you want to see? To me, this is going to be very much a learning experience for the Houston Texans. How does Cully look on the sidelines? You know, how does the offense look? Did you get a steal in the third round at the quarterback spot? Like, I'm not expecting the Texans to win many games this year. I like rebuilds. I think they're fun. I think it's fun to watch young pieces grow. That's part of this year's problem, though, for the Houston Texans. Didn't have a first or second rounder, so you have no one to, like, kind of gravitate towards. Like, when Deshaun Watson was a rookie, that wasn't a great team, but it was fun to see Deshaun Watson in his rookie year. Right. Okay, this is what the future holds. This is why the Texans traded up for him. I like where we're going. You know, you don't have that yet. You probably have to wait a year for that, unless, you know, the Stanford quarterback can surprise a lot of folks. But the rest of who watches the NFL, they don't think very highly of the Houston Texans either. CBS Sports was grading the top NFL offenses. The bottom five offenses, Cecil, in the NFL, they project the Giants, the Texans, the Jets, the Bears, and the Lions. Not very good company for this Houston Texans offense.
No, not at all. I'll be honest with you. I don't expect them to be in the bottom of the league offensively.
Really?
I don't. I think you brought in a bunch of linemen who are veterans, who are good where they were previously. And you also have Laramie Tunsil, and Titus Howard to help out with that. So I think the O-line will be okay. If Tyrod's the starter, he does not turn the ball over. He's not going to do anything spectacular,
but
he does not turn the football over. So, in my opinion, when you have a decent O-line, you have a quarterback that doesn't turn the ball over. Look at your running back room. We talked about that earlier in the show. You got a Philip Lindsay who has been very productive. You have a Mark Ingram who's coming off a 1,000-yard season a couple years ago. You got a Brandon Cooks out there that can make plays. You got a competitive tight end room who's made plays for you last year and know their role. So, I don't expect them to be the bottom of the barrel. I expect them to be middle of the road, just being honest. I'm not sure if Tyrod would be the guy. I think it would be interesting to see what the offense looks like with Davis in there. But just going off of what we've seen from Tyrod in the past, it would be more of a conservative offense. But he's going to take care of the ball. He's not going to lose you any games. And if you get a lead, he'll be able to take care of the lead.
At what point do you put Davis Mills behind center and see what you have? I mean, he's a third-round rookie. This isn't somebody that I think you expect to start day one.
To be honest, I'm having a fair competition. So
okay,
if he wins it, go for it. If not, by the bye week, which is around week 9, 10 this year, whatever it is, if we have no sense of or no chance of making the playoffs, I'm putting him in there. That'll be at the latest. I'm putting him in there. There's no point in them not playing if we're not. That way you can see a good 7-8 games of, okay, what do we have in Davis? Do we see potential in him? And if not, then you know what you're going with your first-round pick.
Yeah, my point's not so much like I'm scared to put a third-rounder behind center. Mine's just I don't want to ruin him. Like the Oilers did this with Steve McNair behind Chandler. They let him wait a year. They're talking that perhaps you see Fields in Cleveland sit behind Dalton for a certain amount of games. I mean, Mahomes sat behind Alex Smith for a year. Yeah. So I want to make sure I just don't put him in a bad spot. Like David Carr, I think, was ruined by the offensive line a bit. Yeah. Like I don't think he reached his full potential. Maybe it wasn't going to be good to begin with, but being sacked so much, I think, certainly derailed what he could have been.
It ruins quarterbacks. I've seen Blaine Gabbert be ruined. Mm-hmm. Who's still a viable backup, and he's doing better now with coming in sparingly and whenever, you know, helps. I think he helped the Titans win a couple games a couple years ago, whatever the case may be. He's still around. But when you put a guy in that's not ready or behind a terrible offensive line or just an awful offense, you're going to ruin that kid.
Yep.
Like, he was literally saying ghost out there. We heard Sam Darnold say that a couple years ago. Like it's like you can ruin a kid when you don't put him in a good situation. So if the situation is not I'm going to say healthy. If it's not a healthy situation, you shouldn't put him out there because you are going to ruin the kid. But I think this offensive line is going to be decent. I think if you put him out there, he'll be able to handle his own. And I think another thing, too, looking at Sam Darnold, his situation, I don't think Adam Gase did anything for him.
Right.
I think Pep Hamilton here, alongside with Tim Kelly,
yep,
they'll put him in a position to succeed, and he'll have some weapons around him to do some things. So I think here be a little bit different. I don't expect them to be a 10-win team.
Sure.
But I do expect this offense to be decent.
I want to see him, too. I think putting him, like you said, right after the bye, I think is a good spot for him. Make sure that he understands the offense. I don't think the offensive line is going to get him killed either. I think it's a pretty good one if they stay healthy with Tunsil and, like you mentioned, Titus Howard, who's emerging into a pretty good piece on the offensive line. But I just want to make sure he knows the playbook, that he's ready to go.
There's no rush.
Yeah, there's no rush with him. But I do want to see, okay, is Davis Mills somebody that can be a starter in the NFL? Maybe 6 games, maybe 8 games is enough to get a little bit of a taste of that. Because if you're drafting first in next year's draft, I'm not going to pull up a mock draft and see who's projected to go in next year's mock draft. But if you're in a situation where there's like a can't miss defensive end and there's a marginal quarterback to take number one overall, yeah, and you have Davis Mills, who's looking pretty good. He's looking like maybe he can be a starting caliber quarterback. Maybe he can be a top 15, top 20 quarterback in the NFL. Maybe you go with that defensive lineman because you know what you have in Davis Mills. You have enough of a sample size to understand what he can be,
yeah,
and it could help you determine on what you do with the first overall pick next year.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Yeah, I think 8 games would be enough. I think 6 games would be enough, whatever the case may be. But I'll be honest with you. I want to see a fair competition to start with. I don't want to rush the kid,
right?
But I do want to see him compete. I do want to see him lead, and I think the offense that whatever offense they'll have this year will be a lot easier on Davis than the Bill O'Brien offense that was just extremely, extremely, extremely complicated. And I think if you bring a rookie along slow, if you take care of him, if you bring him up to speed and move him up when he's ready, give him more responsibility when he's ready, I think he'll be fine.
Why was O'Brien's offense so complicated compared to other guys in the NFL?
It was just too much. I remember coming in 2015 as a free agent, and I went to the CVS or Walgreens, and I bought a 200 pack of index cards.
Yeah.
And then go back to the – that's what I do. I write everything down. I'm a writer.
Yeah, I do that too.
I like to write. So as I'm learning the playbook and learning the formations, I'm writing all the formations down. I used 150 of those cards for formations. And I'm like, yo, what is going on? Like, what? Like, it was just so complicated. I think the offense is, I think it's good when used correctly, right? I think it's awesome. But for a rookie, for a vet, I was a fifth-year veteran at the time, it was tough to pick it up. So I couldn't imagine a rookie coming from college where it's a totally, totally different offense, totally different scheme, and coming into this scheme that Bill O'Brien had, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's like mind blowing. And they didn't necessarily groom the young guys in a way that would have been good for Davis Mills. They would have just threw him in the fire, and you're teaching them 150 formations, and you got to make the mic point, and you got to know all the different routes, because you might be in the slot and you got 3 different routes based on the coverage. And as a quarterback, you got to know all 3. Yeah. And know what coverage the defense is in, and know the switch to play. And sometimes you come to the line of scrimmage with 2 plays based on what the defense is in. So it's just so much that goes into it. And when it does, I mean, he was – O'Brien, no offense to him, when he was in New England, the OC New England, they had, you know, one of the best years ever as an offense.
So he was doing that in New England too.
Yeah, but that's just, you know, you got Tom Brady and those guys. That's what it is. You can do that. Randy Moss, you can do that, right?
Yeah.
Wes Welker and those guys. But it's just everybody can't get brought to speed that way. And they, I don't know. I just think the offense is good when used correctly, but it's too much at most of the time, in my opinion.
If you were doing that, say you went to Jacksonville,
yeah,
flipped it. You were with the Bill O'Brien style offense first, and then you're going to Jacksonville and you're trying to learn the plays and you're putting it on your index cards. How many cards would you have had there in Jacksonville?
Oh, 25, 50.
Wow.
For me, it's a big
That's
difference.
Crazy.
It's a big difference. We were very simple. It was so much, and I had three different coordinators in my 4 years in Jacksonville. Three different head coaches, three different offensive coordinators, two different wide receiver coaches, two GMs, two owners.
So, I mean, you saw new things.
I saw new things.
Going to the Texans wasn't the first time you saw something new.
No, none of that compared to what I had to learn here.
Wow.
None of it.
So complicated, safe to say.
Absolutely.
713-572-4610. Let's go to Marcus. Marcus, what's going on?
Hey, nothing much. Hey, I was listening to you guys, and Cecil, you kind of stole some of my thunder previously. This team is going to be better than expected. People aren't looking at this roster. You know, I just heard your co-host say that this team is terrible and it is not very talented. They've gotten better on the offensive line, running backs, DBs are better. The DL is better. This team, to me, is more talented than last year. I'm not saying they're world beaters, but I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. People are just, I mean, you have some publications saying they're not going to win any games, or two games, or three games. Their division rivals, those are always toss-up games. I don't care who's, what record it is. Division rival games are always toss-up games. I wouldn't be surprised if we won at least 7 or 8 games.
Marcus, I think that's too many. I think that the offense can be serviceable. Like, the offense is taking a step back. I mean, you're losing a top-5 quarterback in the NFL, and you're adding journeyman Tyrod Taylor. Maybe you play the rookie in Davis Mills. I don't see the defense getting any better. You lose your best player in J.J. Watt off the defensive end. I think the offense can be serviceable, to your point. I don't know how they're stopping teams.
Well, this is the deal. J.J. Watt only gave you 5 sacks. Now, Shaq Lawson, if you tell me Shaq Lawson is not going to get you replace that productivity, you know, you got me. But I believe Shaq Lawson is going to replace that productivity that J.J. Watt was giving you. I think their run, this 4-3 defense and their linebackers are going to be able to stop the run. This is my opinion.
Oh, well, hey, I'm with you. I'm optimistic. I don't know if they win 7 games. I don't know if they win 8 games. I think they'll be competitive in a lot of games. But to go back to the J.J. Watt point, but his presence on the field is what makes J.J. J.J., right? Yeah, he only had 5 sacks. But you got to double him. You got to pay attention to him. You got to know where he's at on the field. Even last year, know where he's at on the field all the time because he's a game wrecker. I'm not sure if you're worried about Shaq Lawson in that same manner, right? The idea of what Caserio is doing, he's trying to build competition, bringing a lot of veterans that may have been injured or that are average players to come in and compete and do well. You want them to do well. You want them to be competitive, right? But they were let go for a reason. They're on the market for a reason. They're signing 1-year deals for a reason. You know what I mean? So even though I do think they'll be better than expected, I don't think that they'll be a 7-10 team.
Yeah, it's weird to say that nowadays, adding in that extra game. I appreciate the call, Marcus. And I think that the best chance for the Texans to get around 6, 7, 8 wins is if they're incredibly well coached. Is if they're incredibly well coached and you put together a good game plan week in, week out. You know, you score enough with the offense, and maybe the defense just exceeds expectations. Maybe that's what was holding this team back. I don't see it in terms of the talent, but maybe, you know, you bring in, I'm drawing a blank, Lovie Smith, yeah. And he's just so much better right now. And look, nothing in Lovie Smith's past. Well, I mean, he's had good success as a coach. He wasn't great at Illinois, and maybe that's not fair to use his stint at Illinois in college with what he's going to be as a defensive coordinator with the Texans. Probably isn't fair. But if Lovie Smith is just a better DC than Romeo Crennel in this day and age in the NFL, maybe that defense does look a lot better. Tyrod Taylor, who you mentioned, doesn't make many mistakes. Maybe he game manages, is able to keep you in games. That defense can keep you in games. Maybe you sneak away 7 to 6, 7, 8 wins a year. I don't see that happening. I don't think the roster's there. Could it be a good starting point for going forward? Hopefully. Maybe. I just don't see 500 anywhere near this team.
Would you want 500, though?
No.
Or would you want?
No, I mean, I want to trust the process. I want the rebuild. I want draft picks to look forward to. I really do. I want 3-14. Like, if I'm a true Texan fan, I want 3-14. 3-14, number one pick in the draft. Give me a player to be excited for. Who's the player you're excited for on this team right now? Like, you mentioned the offense. Nick Casera's done a good job piecing it together, and it does look like a better piece together roster. I'll give you credit for that. It does look like a better piece together roster than in years past. There's more depth. I think, like, you know, your backups are better than what they've been in the past. But how many games are you going to win on backups? It's great when you have a playoff team to have that depth and to have, you know, pieces that you can go to when they're hurt.
Right.
But, the top-end talent just isn't there to win in the NFL.
It's not. You do have a lot of role players on the team right now. That's just what. Again, they signed one-year deals for a reason. Mm-hmm. You can sign 45, 50 guys to a short-term deal like that. It's a reason. They were injured. They haven't lived up to their ability or potential, whatever the case may be. So you're hoping a few of those guys can, like Desmond King, you're hoping he can come along. That would be awesome to have somebody on the other side of Roby, right? That would be awesome to get another corner that can be halfway decent. So we'll see, man. I personally would want to see them win more games because that would just be fun to, you know, see them win. But at the same time, like, I want them to get number one overall pick. Whoever that number one pick is, I want them to be able to have that pick along with the picks they get from Deshaun. That's going to happen.
It's like a win-win. They win more games, great. If not, hey, we got the number one pick, which is something you couldn't count on this past season. So frustrating to the Texans lose week in, week out, not having that first-round pick to kind of be the feel-good. The feel good about the loss. It's always okay whenever you have those picks. Oh, we got some breaking news in tennis. We're going to talk about that next. Also, who is the one man to blame for this horrible Houston Astros bullpen? Talk about it next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham. Beat's got Cecil's approval over here. Robert Harris producing for Figgy Fig. 713-572-4610. I understand that tennis doesn't really move the meter right, but we had a good conversation a moment ago about the mental health of athletes, and Naomi Osaka, who's playing in the French Open, she's boycotting the media. And Roland Garros and the other Grand Slam events have been in contact with her and her team, and they're flat out saying, look, we're going to keep fining you, and the fines and the, you know, things are going to be more severe, maybe suspension at some point. Naomi Osaka moments ago has withdrawn from the French Open. And you said, Cecil, that we were going to break. That's a good thing for her.
Yeah, I think just looking at the overall picture, number one, she did not want to talk to the media after her matches because of questions that may come or whatever the case may be. Perfect. When you sitting out and taking time away from yourself, guess what? You don't got to talk to nobody if you don't want to. So now you can fully have control and work on your mental health, right? And at the same time, not that you're pleasing the other, like the French Open and the other people that's involved, the tennis world, but guess what? You're not breaking any rules.
Right.
You know what I mean? So at the same time, you're working on your mental health, you're getting healthy, you're doing what you got to do, and then at the same time, you're not breaking any rules. Because I tell you what, them $15,000 fines are going to add up.
Sure.
And from what the article says, it sounds like they were willing to add more to it, right? They were willing to have more punishment to it. And being a professional athlete, and she's still young. She's been in this game for a while, and it's different when you are the spotlight. Like, when you're on a team, you can sometimes hide behind other players, or you can say anything. that's a whole other topic. But all attention's on you. Win, lose, or draw, guess what? You have to talk to the media. You can't depend on the quarterback or the point guard or the goalie, whatever the case may be. The attention is to come back and be stronger in whatever area she was going. But obviously, she's going through something, right? She has to be going through something to take time away from your particular job. So whatever that is, I hope she gets better, and I think it's good for all parties.
Yeah, I think this is a good move, too. And I believe in being bold, and even if that means, though, that if you're participating in that sport, you have to adhere to the rules of that sport. If that sport says that, you know, you need to talk to the media after the game, which – look, this isn't unique to tennis. This is true to all sports, and we've had the conversation earlier about why it's important, because it does, you know, bring a connection between the fans and the athletes, the teams, whatever the case may be. But, you know, to be able to be an advocate for, you know, mental health, and, you know, don't just boycott the press. You know, if you're that serious about it, hey, pull out of the tournament.
There you go.
You know, if the tournament's forcing you to talk to the media, which I think that's fair to do, but absolutely, you don't want to do that because you're worried about your mental health. Well, you can't have it both ways. Like, pull out of the tournament. Yep. So I applaud her for doing this. I think this is the stance that she needed to take. I like that she's being an advocate for mental health. I hope everything's going okay with her.
Right, right.
It'll be interesting to, you know, to follow the next few months to now, see what happens with,
I think,
you know, her.
I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you.
No, you're fine.
That's my fault. I think it's good on her team part, too. Like, whoever she surrounds herself with, obviously they gave her the advice that, hey, let's come together. We don't want it. Because when you, for example, Kyrie Irving, when he blacked out the media earlier in the year, it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people were upset about it. It was a big storm, boom, boom, boom. If you can avoid that, right, and still work on your mental health and get what you want to get done accomplished and not have this big old thing or sound, this big old cloud around you, I think that's a win. So shout out to her and her team.
713-572-4610, Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham. Houston Astros in action today, starting a four-game series with the Boston Red Sox. Some afternoon baseball. Nothing better than afternoon baseball. I love sports in time slots when they're not supposed to be on.
Mm.
Like, you get, like, the London game in the NFL. Like, yep, you wake up, you have some NFL football with your coffee at 9 a.m. Or, like, March Madness, you have basketball at, you know, lunch. Yep. I think that's always really, really cool. Baseball going on now. Astros will be in action this afternoon. The Astros bullpen has been terrible. One of the worst bullpen. Or I said offense, didn't I? The Astros offense has been fine. The Astros bullpen has been terrible. One of the worst bullpens in Major League Baseball. We saw Presley give up that three-run homer to Fernando Tatis the other day that tied the game. They would lose it into extra innings. No thanks to Taylor Jones, the first baseman who dropped the pop-up that could have given Presley the save and the win. Scrub yesterday didn't look good either out of the bullpen after Greinke went eight strong innings. He gave up three runs. Fortunately, the Astros had a big lead, so they were able to, you know, hang on, get the victory there. Astros did announce a couple of roster moves a little bit earlier today. Blake Taylor, Jose Urquidy have been called up. Urquidy will start today's game. We'll probably see Taylor out of the bullpen here pretty soon over the next game or two. And they did send down Andre Scrub. You kind of got the feel of that after he pitched in back-to-back games for the Houston Astros. Now, it's very easy to point blame to the players, the relievers not doing their job. Dusty Baker not handling the bullpen very well. Is he a reason that the bullpen's so bad? To me, the biggest culprit why the Astros bullpen is terrible is because of general manager James Click. I love James Click hire. I love the resume, the pedigree that he brought in from Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay has been the model organization in Major League Baseball for the ability to win a bunch of games with a small payroll. I was a huge fan of what Click could bring to the Houston Astros when he got brought over after the Astros let go of Jeff Luhnow after that whole, air quote, scandal that went on with Hinch and Luhnow and led to their exit. But James Click, he knew he had a bad bullpen last year in the playoffs. What was the biggest weakness of this team? The bullpen is terrible. Give Dusty Baker some help. What does he do in the offseason? He signs Ryan Stanek, who's been okay. He's only really had one good year in Major League Baseball. Pedro Baez, who has not pitched a single inning this season, and is a guy who's had injury concerns in the past. And he welcomes back Joe Smith, who opted out of last year and has been absolutely atrocious this season. What is James Click doing? Like, you're the general manager of this team. Make some moves. Improve the weaknesses. I feel like he got a free pass this offseason, and now here we are over 50 games into the season. What's the Astros' biggest weakness? Still the bullpen.
You're right. I think he does get a pass, and I think he's inherited something. It reminded me of, like, not very similar, but how Steve Kerr inherited Mark Jackson's team.
Yeah.
Well, Click inherited all the talent that was there, and he is surrounded by great talent, right? But that bullpen is an area that's been the problem for the last couple of years, so he should have addressed it in a way that he should have, I mean, there's some type of way, address the area, go bring in some veterans. My question is now, two of them for you, how long can they hide this bullpen or continue to try to believe in it? Because I'm a guy that don't want to give up on my players yet, right? Maybe that's just a former guy, the former player enemy talk. I don't want to give up on him. Let's see what he can do. But you're 52 games in. 110 left, whatever case may be, and you're second in your division right now. How long do you wait before the trade deadline? How long do you wait to see, or should you make a move and go out and get a couple of veterans or some more relievers?
I think that the Astros are good enough to where they can sustain this for another couple of months. Like, they could probably bleed this through the deadline. Like, okay, you probably don't have to make a move tomorrow.
Okay.
You probably have a good enough rotation. You're getting some arms back. You know, or Keith comes back today. Blake Taylor's been activated from the injured list. McCullers, you hope, would come back sooner rather than later. Javier's moved over to the bullpen. That's going to help. Nolly Paredes. Hopefully he can figure out his command in the minors because the Astros sent him down because he can't throw strikes. So, I mean, you do have pieces there that are intriguing. If Taylor pitches well like he pitched last season, frankly, if Paredes can get back to his previous year form, that's a piece that helps you. Javier to the bullpen certainly helps you. But I want a guy I can trust in the seventh or eighth inning. You might be able to sustain it in the regular season. You might not even have to make a move and win this division. Mm-hmm. But to me, to be a true contender in the World Series, you're going to need an extra arm in the bullpen next to Ryan Pressly that can give you some quality innings that you can trust in close games, in tight games. Because right now, Dusty Baker's bringing in Ryan Pressly to get an out in the eighth inning up by three runs and then having to carry him over into the ninth inning. So that's difficult for a reliever to sit down and come back up.
Yeah.
You know, those relievers don't really like that a whole lot. They now, like one clean inning.
Is that on Click or is that on Dusty in that situation?
Well, I mean, don't get me started on Dusty Baker. I am not a Dusty Baker fan when it comes to managing a game, but he's not responsible for making the offseason moves. I think Dusty Baker can manage it better. I don't think James Click has given him a very good arsenal of relievers. Mm. And the injury bug has hurt. Look, Blake Taylor coming back today. Josh James, he's dealing with that hip injury, although he's not really been somebody you could fully trust over his career either. But look, the A's are better this season. They won the division last year. The Oakland A's are the reigning AL West champion. So it might take an extra arm just to win the regular season title in the AL West. And I certainly think you need it for the playoffs. So to me, the bigger concern is James Click just not doing anything. He's a general manager of a team. And the two moves that you'll point to that he did, well, he signed Michael Brantley. He signed Michael Brantley because he read on Twitter the Blue Jays were about to sign him. He was following Springer out of town. You know, he re-signed McCullers, but McCullers kind of gave him a hometown discount a little bit. So James Click needs to do something. If he was the GM of the Texans right now, he'd probably be fired. O'Brien would have fired him some way, somehow. Not sure how, but he would have gotten it done. The Astros begin a four-game series with the Red Sox. Red Sox have been better today, or better this year than a lot of people thought they were going to be as well. Red Sox entering today, leading the wild card race. So way too early to talk about playoffs and playoff scenarios. But the Astros chasing the Red Sox in that wild card race. Just keep that in mind. 713-572-4610. Cecil brought up a good point earlier that I wanted to carry this conversation onto the air. What is the toughest sport to play, toughest thing to do in sports? Also, that's some Mike Tyson news I want to share with you. That's next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Instead, it's Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham, Robert Harris, at Cecil Shorts III, at Robo Harris Jr., at Jeremy Branham. We're all at Sports Radio 610. How big a fan are you guys of Mike Tyson? Iron Mike Tyson? Because I'm trying to figure out how to put this. Like, I love Mike Tyson. That's kind of a weird thing to say. But to me, he's the most fascinating athlete of our generation.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because everything he does is newsworthy. Like, still, 20 years past, when maybe longer than 20 years. When was his prime? Mid-90s? I think he was in jail in the mid-90s. But we're 30 years past his prime as the heavyweight champion of the world, and still everything he does, like, moves mountains. Like, he's still one of the most intriguing athletes in sports. And whenever he was in his heyday, too, like, he was knocking out dudes, you know, with one big right hook. He was doing this time after time after time. I think he was the youngest heavyweight champion of all time, doing it in vicious ways that were just, you know, you had to watch it. You remember where you were when you were watching. It was exciting. It was thrilling. And then what happened outside of the ring too, right? I mean, that's something that's really bad. It's awful. It's awful what happened, what he did, but still too, that was huge news, right? We're in the business of news and sports. And that's one of the biggest sports stories in history. Whenever he went to jail for what he did, all of a sudden you take away the heavyweight champion of the world. And I understand he lost to Buster Douglas before he went to prison, but now he's gone for 3 years. Mm-hmm. He comes back. He's must-see TV. Starts knocking out dudes left and right again. Becomes a heavyweight champion again. Then he bites Evander Holyfield's ear off. Like it's must-see TV because it's a train wreck. You don't know what's going to happen next. And whenever you don't know what's going to happen next, but you know it's going to be exciting, you're watching it from the, you know, the edge of your seat, right? And still to this day, like, he's still this figure where we can't get enough of, like, we whether it's his stand-up show or his podcast or like his little cameos in wrestling, like, people still gravitate to Mike Tyson. And I don't know if you guys have watched that little documentary that ESPN or ABC put together. I think it's called I forget what it's called. Undisputed or Knockout. It's Knockout. It's called Knockout. I haven't watched it yet. It's on the DVR. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to watch it.
Tyson is still box office.
Still box office.
I think that's for sure. I mean, even if he's like a cameo in the movie, like
Hangover.
Like Hangover, you know what I mean?
It's great.
It's funny. It's he. Whenever he talks, people listen. But I'm not sure if it's for the right. Like, I guess it's for entertainment.
It's not always the right reason, no.
But I guess it's for entertainment, though, right? I mean, he just fought like a couple months ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he fought Roy Jones Jr.
And
in the big, which, by the way, that stuff's got to stop.
What's got to stop?
You have old dudes fighting, and like Julio Cesar Chavez and Hector Camacho are about to be on the undercard of Anderson Silva and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. That is sad to me. Like, I grew up on Julio Cesar Chavez. I loved watching. That dude won 100 fights in his career. I love Julio Cesar Chavez. I do not want to watch that guy fight when he's 65 years old. I already saw what Oscar De La Hoya did to him. Like, that was enough. Mm-hmm. That's whenever he needed to hang it up.
Yeah.
I didn't need to see that anymore. I don't need to see Mike Tyson fighting at 55. I don't need to see Anderson Silva.
You didn't watch it?
One of the best MMA dudes. Yeah, I watched it.
See? Exactly. You watch him and Roy Jones spar or whatever that was.
Yeah. That was it was called a draw, by the way. That was the biggest travesty of a boxing match. That was wrestling is what it was.
That was wrestling.
World Wrestling Entertainment. That wasn't a boxing fight. But I don't like these cards, man. Like I love boxing. I don't love it as much now because it's not entertaining as much because you don't have the names like you had back, you know, when I was younger and Tyson and Holyfield and you still had George Foreman hanging on a little bit, Lennox Lewis. Mayweather was kind of like the last great American fighter. You got a couple of good heavyweights now that I'll watch. But, like, it's kind of transitioned a little bit more to UFC, which I love UFC, too. I'll watch them MMA all day, every day. But, you know, nothing was like that big boxing heavyweight fight for the title. Like, I don't like to see these old guys fight. It's sad to me.
Well, how do you feel about Mayweather then?
Well, I mean, he's still close to his, you know, career.
He's retired. He's in his 40s, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But he's fighting guys like he's fighting a YouTuber.
Yeah, what's Logan or Jake? I always get him confused. Logan Paul.
He's gonna fight Logan
Paul. Mm-hmm.
He's fighting a YouTuber.
Jake Paul is the guy that beat Askren.
Like to me, like you're messing up. I'll always be a Mayweather fan, but you're messing up your legacy. Like if you mess around and slip or something, I don't think Paul will even touch him because he's a YouTuber. I don't care how much training you do. You're a YouTuber. He's a professional fighter.
Well, okay,
one of the best defenders ever. But if you mess around and slip up and get popped, and you knocked out on the floor.
Jake Paul knocked out Ben Askren. Jake Paul, YouTuber, Logan Paul's brother, fought Jake Askren. Now, he was a wrestler. He's an MMA guy, not a boxer.
Yeah.
He knocked him out in the first 30 seconds.
But they were boxing, though, right?
They were boxing.
Yeah. So
I think Askren took a dive. But
I wouldn't doubt that. I wouldn't doubt that. I think they'd do anything for money.
I think Mayweather-McGregor was a dive. Like, I think
you?
Well, he didn't dive. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Conor McGregor would not stand a chance with Floyd Mayweather in his prime.
It wasn't.
I mean, McGregor had him the first, two rounds?
Because Mayweather was just sitting there letting him. You know, because this was the deal that they made behind the scenes. Mayweather and McGregor sat down for lunch. They said, you're famous. We can make a lot of money with each other. McGregor's telling Mayweather, look, you're going to beat my butt in the boxing ring. I know that. You make me look strong for a couple rounds, and then you win it at the end.
Well, so what do you mean by a dive? It was set up?
Yeah, I don't think it was a dive because he didn't get knocked out. I think they did call it. I think it was
an
8th round, something like that.
It was a TKO.
But I think it was more of a fix. It was a fix.
Do you think it was fixed?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
Now, I know boxing is extremely crooked. My grandfather was a professional boxer for a long time.
And this isn't even boxing.
It's not boxing.
This is like sports entertainment boxing.
This is WWE.
Yes, absolutely. I think it was rigged or whatever.
No, I don't think the Conor was tired.
Yeah, he did tire out. He gassed
like,
out.
I just think he was literally tired. Like, he wasn't. And I do think he didn't have a. I think he knew he didn't have a shot.
And Mayweather was just sitting on his heels the entire like first three or four rounds. I wasn't even throwing punches. And I know he didn't train. I know
he didn't train.
I mean, that kind of explains it.
like I don't think it was real training going to this.
But no, I don't like this little YouTuber versus boxing thing. That's like to me, it's a travesty. I understand that it's selling and they're doing it for money, which is what everything comes down to these days. But I hate watching it. I hate that it's a thing. I mean, it really is sports entertainment.
It really is.
Well,
I mean, would you see what boxing has come to, though?
No, it's sad.
It's a sad state.
The
height of it, I'm not sure of the height of it, but going back to the 90s where you had heavyweights after heavyweight after heavyweight, everybody's tuning in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to the smaller guys as time went on, right?
Yeah.
And now it's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's not
it's
good.
It's just like it's just famous people like Ocho Cinco is going to be fighting on the.
He's on that same undercard.
On the undercard. I'm like, what is going on?
I hate it. It's a travesty. It's a travesty of the sport. It's I don't even know how to explain it. It'd be like if old Major League Baseball players were playing like a pickup softball game when they were 70 and people were like filling the stadiums and buying it off pay-per-view.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you enjoy, say, Michael Jordan playing one-on-one with, I don't know, Magic Johnson? Like, would you enjoy seeing that?
I would watch it, but I'd also be like, man, I don't like to see my legends like this. You know what I mean?
So you want to keep that memory, the good memories of the people that you respected, the legends, you want to keep that in your head.
Yeah.
You don't want to see whatever it is, them limping around.
I don't
want
to see Julio Cesar Chavez at 70 years old fighting Hector Camacho Jr. in the sub-main event, the co-main event, with Anderson Silva and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. That's part of it, too. Like, I'd love to keep Anderson Silva's memory. I understand he hasn't been that good in his MMA career over the last, ever since he broke his leg.
Right.
But, I mean, that guy was one of the best mixed martial artists of all time.
Like, why do you like UFC? Like UFC better than boxing now?
Currently, 2021 UFC, 2021 boxing. Yeah, I'll take UFC over boxing right now just because there's not as many names in boxing.
Yeah.
Like, who moves the meter in boxing? Who intrigues you in boxing? You have a few heavyweights that are up there, but.
Canelo, maybe?
See, even Canelo, like this last Canelo fight, I didn't watch that.
I didn't either.
Like, who was he fighting? He wasn't fighting a dude. I know there was a guy that interrupted the press conference that's trying to make some money and get a fight with him. But to me, MMA is the best combat sport in town right now. Mm. Like, I love John Jones. It's a shame he's not fighting. Like, he's got his little deal with the UFC where he's fighting back and forth for money. But to me, they just put on a better show. They put on a better, better card. I was whenever they came into Houston a few years ago, when Jones was fighting Dominic Reyes for the light heavyweight title,
yeah,
dude, they take care of their media. I mean, media's cage side.
Do that.
I was cage side, John Jones, Dominic Reyes, and it was watching it in person is something else.
Who's the main guy though that runs the UFC? What's his name?
Dana White.
Dana White. He's a media guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he knows how to do it.
So he,
that's why he's built it up the way he has.
He knows how to. Make guys like you happy, get you guys going and get that. So, yeah, that's a smart move.
It kind of goes back to the point we were talking about earlier with Osaka.
Yes.
Like, you take care of the media. They write about you. People gain interest, blah, 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 blah.
Yes, sir.
George Foreman. Oh, anyways, back to the Mike Tyson thing. So there's that documentary about him, Knockout. I'm going to plan on watching that. But Hulu's coming out with a show on Tyson as well. It's called Iron Mike. And this is going to be about his entire life, about how, the good and the bad. And Mike Tyson's not too pleased about it because he's got his own little thing that he's putting on about what portrayed his life. And his way is probably going to be a little bit better than the way Hulu's going to do it. So Hulu's putting together a show on Mike Tyson that's going to portray his life.
But wouldn't Hulu have to ask Mike Tyson to do it? You don't have to ask that person?
I don't know how that works. I guess not. I guess not. It's happening.
Well, yeah, obviously. I guess I'm just surprised by it. I would feel like he would have some type of say. Maybe not. I guess you don't have to.
I don't know.
I guess you don't have to.
But are you here for it or not? Will you watch the Hulu?
Yes.
Mike, it's not so much a documentary. It's going to be like a mini-series based on the life and struggles of Iron Mike.
A mini-series?
I think it's eight episodes.
Yeah, I'm here for that.
Yeah, I am too.
I like Mike, so I'm here for that.
They said it's coming out this summer. I'm here for that. Are you here for it or not? 713-572-4610. Another boxing movie that's coming out. It's going to be about the times and trials of George Foreman. I saw that they announced the lead, the guy that's going to play George Foreman. I didn't recognize the name. I think this one's coming out in the summer as well. It's going to be about an hour and a half, two-hour movie about the life of George Foreman. Here for it, not for it. That's Houstonian now. I went to kindergarten with George Foreman's son.
His name is not as – I mean, I shouldn't say that. But I don't think he's as interesting as Mike Tyson.
See, I definitely not. Because, I just said a moment ago, I think Mike Tyson might be the most interesting athlete of our lifetime. George Foreman's life story is pretty good.
See, I don't know much about him.
Pretty good. I mean, he was Thriller in Manila. Mm-hmm. He was the favorite to beat Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali, a little rope and dope, knocks out Foreman, heavyweight champion of the world. Foreman goes away for a long time, gets into ministry. I mean, he was in ministry. He was retired for about 15, 20 years.
After that fight?
It was pretty close to after. I think he might have had another fight or two after that, but it was pretty soon. I mean, he was in the prime of his career.
And retired.
He retired, felt he had to go into ministry, felt like it was his calling. His God call. Was talking to him. Mm-hmm. And he was retired for about 15 to 20 years. Came back when he was big George Foreman, now kind of what we know him to now, won the heavyweight title at like 40 after being retired for 15-something years. And then, of course, the grill. I wonder how the grill's portrayed in the movie.
That's pretty special.
Yeah. So I'm here for it. I'm here for the George Foreman movie as well. 713-572-4610. Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham. Got some afternoon baseball going on. Astros will be in action a little after 3 o'clock. They get started with a four-game series over the Red Sox. Cecil, we were talking a little bit during a break, and you said hardest thing to do in sports, hitting a baseball.
Yes, I do think that a ball coming at you somewhere between 85 to 100-plus miles an hour and you having to see the ball and be able to hit the ball, it takes extreme skill. I think that's in my opinion, maybe the hardest skill to do in all professional sports.
Yeah, you're trying to hit a round ball with a round bat square, and you mentioned all the velocity, you know, the sliders, curveballs, changeups, things like that. It is the hardest thing to do in sports. What did you ever play?
I did. I played in high school. It's probably my best sport, but it was boring. So I didn't. I wouldn't go to practice. I would, because I ran track too. So I would go to track practice, and then after track practice, I would go to the batting cage.
Okay.
So I was a pretty good hitter. Didn't start. I wasn't like a starter on the team, but I was on the team and I played and had a significant role. So it was cool, but it's tough, man. Like to hit a baseball. I mean, think about it. If you go 30 for 100 or 3 for 10, let's make it simple, 3 for 10, you could be an all-star.
Right.
Like in any other sport, if you drop the ball 7 times, if you go 3 for 10 catching, you're going to get cut.
Sure.
Like it's tough.
It's a sport based on failure.
It is.
There's no doubt about it.
It is. It definitely is.
I had that thought that baseball's like everything. We sensationalize things in baseball. Like you get a pitch that's a little too close to you and people are mad, ready to fight you because you almost hit them with the pitch. Or like, the 3-0 count, you hit a home run, people ready to hit you in the head because you swung at a 3-0 pitch, or you slide a little too hard at second base and you're going to get a hit the next time you're up.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason that, things are sensationalized in baseball is because it is a game based on failure. And you have so many guys that are upset. Oh, I didn't get that guy out. Oh, I went 1-for-4 today. I'm really mad. Mm. And you have so many games, and you have that tension brewing, I think kind of leads to that frustration. Always find these conversations kind of funny because, like, it's really hard to play any sport. People think I threw the football around the yard, I could play quarterback in the NFL. Or, I took a couple of shots out on the playground, I could, I could be a 75% free throw shooter or shoot, 40% from behind the 3-point line. Like, so you can't do that. Like, I mean, the reason that they're pros are because they're pros. But I always think that the toughest sport to play is golf. Tougher than, you talked about baseball being the hardest thing to do in sport. The hardest singular thing to do in sport is to hit a baseball coming at you the way that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to hit it square with a, round bat, round ball. But I think the toughest sport is golf.
Why golf?
There's so many variables in golf. Like, first off, hitting the ball square is a lot more difficult than people think. Look at Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley is one of the greatest athletes of all time, one of the best basketball players of all time. He's got the ugliest golf swing ever. But there's also some guys who aren't very athletic that are, good golfers.
True.
So I just think it can be very difficult. I think people underestimate how difficult it is to hit the ball. I think it's very difficult for people to hit the ball straight once they learn how to hit the ball. Then I think it's very difficult for them to find the distances to hit the golf ball after they learn how to hit it square and how they learn how to hit it straight. You were telling me earlier you have some buddies who think that you should hit the golf course, and you're a little, I guess, hesitant to go out there and play the game.
I'm just not interested. Yeah. Like it just seems
between baseball and golf, it's too slow for you, huh?
It's too slow, and I don't got enough time right now. But what do you think about boxing or UFC?
See, that's tough.
Because I feel like you have to be in great condition.
Yeah.
You got to have endurance, got to have strength, but you also have to be on the offensive side. You got to land your punches and kicks, or whatever the case may be. But you also have to defend yourself and anticipate what's coming.
You know, and I think another thing to that point is people think that I think sometimes that people who are like maybe they're good at bar fighting. They get into a few fights at the bar, they knock out a guy or two, that they can lose the science of what it takes to be great.
Yes,
because you start to get to that level of fighting, a mixed combat sports. Mm-hmm. Like they call it the sweet science for a reason. Like there is some sophisticated stuff that goes on in the ring that the amateur, the guy that has no idea what they're talking about.
Oh yeah,
there are some sophisticated things that those guys do that you wouldn't even know.
Oh yeah,
you don't know what you don't know, but that's a good one because there's a lot of tough guys at the bar that think they can step into an octagon and beat somebody's brains in, and they have a rude awakening coming.
That's why I think Mayweather's gonna kill this YouTuber, whoever his name is.
Unless the fix is in.
There's no way Mayweather's going to lose.
You know what's going to happen?
That's going to ruin his legacy.
It's
going to
be the same thing between Mayweather and McGregor. Well, you watch. You watch. Whenever this plays out, you'll come back to me and be like, you know what? He might have been onto something. Mayweather's going to let Paul hang around for a round or two. Let him hit a punch or two. Mayweather's going to be on his heels. He's going to be backing up. He's going to be dancing. Not going to get hurt. Not going to get hit. But Paul looks like the aggressor. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, about middle rounds, 4, 5, 6, 7, Mayweather, TKO, same way as McGregor. It's going to follow the same exact script.
Now, I do agree. You've seen the hat incident, right? That was definitely
was funny.
Fixed. It was funny, but that was definitely fixed.
He got your hat.
And then takes off running.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about making money.
It is. They're smart money-wise. They're going to make a ton.
They sit together before any of this starts. Okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. This is the way the fight's going to go. We're going to make $30 million and be friends afterwards.
Yeah, for sure.
The Mayweather-McGregor thing, the build-up for that, that was pretty good, though. Remember, they were at the podium, and they were like doing like wrestling promos with one another?
It was fun.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham, coming up next. The AFC South, where does it rank as a division? Are folks sleeping on the AFC South? That's next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.